Today, my topic is choosing your direction so you can take action. Right now, I'm in New York City in a hotel on Lexington Avenue and 48th Street. And when I started out yesterday, I had to travel in a certain direction in order to get into the city. A couple of days before that, I traveled to Newport, Rhode Island, which is a completely different direction. Getting into the city took me about 2 hours, a little bit maybe 2:15, and going to Newport, Rhode Island, I had to travel east instead of west, and I took a ferry for an hour and 20 minutes to Connecticut and then drove for a little more than an hour to Rhode Island. Choosing our directions is obvious when it comes time to determining where we want to end up. So this is what I'm talking about today. In our lives, we face so many choices with regard to direction that making decisions can be really much more difficult. In years past, for instance, people followed in the footsteps of their parents or their families by joining whatever the family business was. For instance, if your family had farms, likely you would have ended up being a farmer. If your family had cattle, it's likely that you would have become a rancher. The same tendency still exists today, and you can see it in families, because parents who are medical doctors have a tendency to produce children who become medical doctors, and children of attorneys tend to become attorneys, and children of politicians, for better or worse, tend to become politicians. And that pattern goes on. In America, the freedom to choose our direction has always been greater than, say, older cultures, and I'll refer to the English and the French. Their social stratification, almost like a caste system, has been established over centuries. But the United States is relatively young, and so there was a lot more freedom. In fact, that's what made America much more appealing to people coming here, is this freedom to choose direction. 50 or more years ago, I wanted to be a missionary. I read about this concept of, quotes, a wave of rising expectations, end quotes, in Latin America. The first time I ever heard somebody speak Spanish when I was a child, I thought, that is the most beautiful sounding language. But the real concern was the haves. It was an American concern, and I guess maybe the Western world concern, that with the advent of television, radio, and then satellite dishes, a lot of information regarding to lifestyle was being beamed into rural locations. And the concern was that somebody sitting way out in the middle of nowhere was going to see refrigerators and freezers and color televisions and cars and all kinds of wonderful things that families had, and then go, wow, I want those things. And it was going to cause unrest. It was going to imbalance the status quo, which status quo is really for the people who like the status. They don't want anybody who doesn't like the status tipping over the apple cart. So people in rural areas of Latin America and Africa and Asia, for instance, don't really have, and didn't then, and maybe even to a certain extent today, don't have the infrastructure, they don't have the jobs, they don't have the money, they don't have the resources necessary to be able to satisfy the demands that now have been triggered by these images, audio and video, of all these wonderful conveniences of Western society. And it's thought that those technologies now, by exciting these desires, oh, I gotta have a freezer and a refrigerator and TVs, literally inspired the migration of rural people into the cities and changed the dynamics in a lot of these cities, simply because there were so many people now, and even the job structures couldn't support all those people trying to find work. No question about it. Today's technologies are life-changing. The other day I talked to an attorney, socially, We were sitting next to one another. And he told me that he works out of his home on Long Island and his apartment in Manhattan. He doesn't rent office space, and he doesn't have to commute to work. That's a huge change from the days when my father was alive and he was an attorney, because everybody had to go to an office, even in small towns, and they worked from those places. And as he was talking, he asked me what I did, and I basically said, my wife Marianne and I do essentially the same thing that you do, except we don't have an apartment in Manhattan. We work out of our boat in Greenport, which was about 100 yards away from this conversation that he and I were having. When you really look at what work is, work typically involves the exchange of value for money. And money, of course, is value. We use our time, we use our physical energy, we use our physical presence, we use our mental, emotional energies, our knowledge, our skills, and so on, to produce value that can be exchanged for money so that we can continue to exchange energy in this fashion. We want a job, we want work that gives us an opportunity to produce enough money so we can do it more and more, as compared to, you know, I love what this kind of work, but I can't afford to do it. I have to labor for somebody else in order to do what I love in the nights and weekends and so on. That's kind of a sad situation when that occurs. In days gone by, because of limited transportation, people usually could only exchange their value locally. I grew up in a small town about 100 miles from New York City, and it was interesting to me to see how this worked. So the farmers and the fishermen and the craftspeople and the blacksmith and other artisans could only sell their wares to their immediate neighbors, people who lived in a very short distance away, you know, small radius, if you will. Even today, with all the trucks and the highways and the trains and planes and the ships, it is the cost of transportation, that is moving a product from point A to point B, that's really where the majority of costs are with regard to products. I can recall reading a terrific book called Unlimited Wealth that talked about human imagination. And Paul Zane Pilser said, if you're going to make cost savings with regard to a product that you're involved with, that you're creating, that you're producing, that you're selling, don't focus on the cost of the product. Focus on the cost of the transportation, the movement of that product, because about 80% of the cost of the product is going to be moving that product from point A to point B. There you go. So your chances of improving it by cutting costs of manufacturing, you're dealing with only 20% of the cost. And that really made sense to me when he was describing that in his book. But one of the great things about being alive today is the major difference in value creation is the value of information. The value of information now exceeds the value of solid stuff. In days gone by, you know, information was kind of a minor consideration. Now we recognize it's enormously important. So information today is easier to produce, it's easier to shape, and it's easier to transport. We're able to move that information through the technology to all parts of the world without moving our bodies. And if we do move our bodies, like I'm doing, I'm 100 miles from where I'm spending some time this summer, but I'm 1,500 miles from where I live. No matter where I am, I can move information outward to all parts of the world. That is an unbelievable blessing. So this improvement in technology, along with the lower costs of it, allows anybody who's willing to perceive their experiences and their knowledge as value for others, and to share it to virtually the entire world. And if we look at our experiences, we look at what we've done, what we've been, what we've had, what we've learned, the challenges we've undergone, those actually give rise to our credentials. Credentials come from more than sitting in a classroom in high school or college or a technical school, despite what those organizations will have us believe. Our experiences and the knowledge that we've accrued from those experiences give us our credentials, and now we have value that can be shared with others. When we notice how life seems to flow, we can assume these natural directions in life are important when it comes time to choosing the directions for how we want to flow our energy, how we want to create and distribute our value. In Christ Returns Reveal Startling Truth, Christ in Letter 1 refers to these natural activities in life as being the truth of existence. Let me think. Do you think understanding how existence exists and works is valuable to you and me? Do you think that knowledge and understanding is important to us? I do. If those natural flows of divine energy are directed to growth on the spiritual, mental, emotional, and physical levels, if that energy is directed into nutrition and nourishment and nurturing on all levels, and healing on all levels, and our protection and fulfillment of needs and work and survival and rhythm and spiritual law and order, the law of cause and effect, and divine consciousness is providing for the well-being of all of its creations by these means, wouldn't you and I want to discover our directions, passions, talents, interests that align with those divine directions? Most people who swim in water know the difference of swimming with the current. They know what that feels like, and they know what swimming against the current feels like. Let me think. Which is easier? If divine energy has direction, doesn't it make sense for you and me to go in the same direction, to move with that current? If the divine thinks those nine directions are important to its creations, why would we want to swim in a different direction? Why wouldn't we want to align ourselves with those natural flows and then experience the benefits of that? Over the years, I've heard people espouse this idea, "Your will, O God, not my will." Right? That's cool. But wouldn't it mean that we would actively support the well-being of divine's creations? Like, oh, your will. If you're trying to care for your creations, that's your will. Maybe I should care for your creations. And it makes sense that we would do that, and it makes sense that we would go into these same life-enhancing directions. Sometimes the positive energies you received when you were growing up guide you to continue in that direction. That way, you're going to go, if I continue to do this, I'm going to continue to receive the energies. They felt good then, they're going to feel good in the future. This is a concept that is very common to us, being rewarded and then seeking the continuation of those rewards. You know what? That's how we train children. That's how we train salespeople. We incentivize salespeople and athletes, pets, and more. If you do this, you will be rewarded. Okay, I got it. But another way to choose directions is when we face significant challenges in our early lives and we recognize, and maybe not then, but in retrospect, what I needed wasn't delivered. I didn't get what I think I needed. And it's the awareness of that need now that might lead us to say, you know what? If I had had that, my life would have been different. Now I want to deliver that to other people. I think people in teaching people in nursing, people in coaching, any kind of facilitation of growth, I think that is likely to be there. In other words, we could choose our directions in life using the presence of positive energy that we experienced. You know, I want more of the same. Or we could go, you know what? There was an absence of some positive energy that I would have loved to have, and now I'm going to go in that direction and seek it for myself and also to provide it to other people, because it's clear to me that there's a need. I think the reality of life for most people is going to be, when it comes time to choose directions, it's going to be based upon a combination of those two. Sometimes we got rewarded, sometimes we didn't get it, and maybe we had intermittent reinforcement, but it becomes very clear what made us feel better, what made us feel worse, and we opt to go in the direction of feeling better. So of the truth of existence, the first one that Christ mentions is growth. So let's look at growth as an example. If you want to look at growth, is that a direction you want to go in? Is this something that you could facilitate in other people as well as in yourself? If this is a natural flow, why don't I ride this wave? If I say growth is naturally occurring and you just consider yourself, yeah, I was a fertilized ovum at one point. I'm different now. I've grown. But another way of saying it is, not only is it naturally occurring, it's divinely designed. Now, everybody experiences physical growth and mental growth, and it would be great if we would see more spiritual growth and more emotional growth, but physical growth can be facilitated. So if you're looking for your own experience of what you want facilitated in your own life, or you're looking for a direction of where you can help other creations of the divine, physical growth can be facilitated. Being taught how to develop physical skills, that requires teachers. There are excellent programs for adults that teach an improved way of walking. Qi walking, C-H-I walking. They also teach running, Qi running. You go, that's kind of cool. That's pretty impressive. And some people are ultra marathoners in that they, because of this improved technique, they can run literally hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of miles. Not far from where I am, I'm in Manhattan, in Queens, there is a ultra marathon that is 3,000 miles long. They run around the 3,000 miles. They do a marathon or more every day within a certain time frame using this technique, and they do it for spiritual purposes. Isn't that the most unbelievable thing? Now, you say to somebody, I can help you improve your walking. Oh, whoa, wait a minute. Walking is natural. I don't need to be taught how to walk. But if you look at the obesity problem in America, you would go, you know what? Maybe walking is a very rare activity for most people. My wife Marianne and I go to the gym on a daily basis. We did earlier today here in the hotel. It's part of our physical growth process. We're not trying to grow bigger. We're trying to grow healthier. We're trying to grow stronger. We're trying to get more fit. We're trying to make things better for our hearts and our lungs. And, you know, that's cool. And back on Long Island, we pay to belong to a gym. People work in that gym. People teach yoga and Pilates. There are personal trainers that you could hire. All kinds of work. So there are people trying to get fit, and there are people facilitating people getting fit. Helping people get fit. That's a direction, and it's obviously a direction for a lot of people. I looked at all the machinery that was in the gym on the third floor of the hotel today, and beautiful stuff. treadmills and weights and other equipment. That's designed, that's manufactured, that's sold, that's transported, that's installed, that's maintained, that's used. There are a lot of people involved in this stuff. I have relatives that go to physical therapists in order to recover faster and better from injuries. One a broken arm, one a neck injury. Massage therapists, chiropractors, all kinds of people help physical bodies become more functional. Wow. Just this one area of physical growth is enormous. How about athletics? Take a sport, add coaching, and that helps people grow physically. Some people say, I want to be an athlete. That's the direction I want to go into. And you turn on any TV and you can see today is Wimbledon, tennis, there's basketball, there's baseball, there are all kinds of things going on involving sports, probably soccer, and on and on and on and on. So somebody said, I want to be an athlete, okay? No, I want to be a coach. I want to facilitate people. No, I want to be an expert on this. I want to just talk about it. And no, I want to be a supplier of the equipment that is used in this particular sport. The number of career opportunities in any given sport, basically endless. Growth. Humans need to learn. Learning is growth. You want to teach? You want to be a teacher? What do you know? What do you know? And then figure out how to teach it. Better yet, figure out how to teach it online. If you could do anything, you could teach it online. Wow, how cool is that? How cool is that? We can learn physical skills. We can see mental skills. We can learn facts and figures, mental processes, and we can teach people in every one of those areas. Anything and everything has so much nuance and depth that it offers career opportunities to amazing extents. I was sitting in the boat the other day, and I was journaling. I looked over at the control panel. I'm looking at these gauges and levers and controls and the steering wheel. Everything was thought up. Everything was designed. Everything was manufactured. Everything was marketed and sold. Everything was bought and installed. Everything was explained and maintained. And that required an amazing amount of human imagination, ingenuity and activity, and jobs. So all a person had to do is define the direction. What interests you the most? What interests you the most? I used to say this to people. Here's a way to look at this. If you were going to a cocktail party and there were four or five groups of people, three to four to five people in these groups, and they knew you were coming and they wanted to hear your opinions on whatever subjects, so you would be able to speak to each of these groups about one subject most interesting to you, that you were most passionate about. If you could identify three, four, five things that you would love to talk about if there was somebody interested in listening, and you know what? When there were 7 billion people on the planet, those people who would be interested in those three, four, five things that excite you, they exist. They're out there. They're available. They can be found. You can connect to them. You go, wow, wow. Years ago, on Long Island and later in Manhattan, I worked for a company that sold Yellow Pages advertising. I began my career, lasted 10 years, as a sales representative calling on established accounts as well as brand new businesses, people, men and women who just went into business, got a phone, and now I would call on them to help them with advertising. On a daily basis, I used to say this to myself, and sometimes I spoke it aloud. I didn't know you could make a living doing this almost every single day. It was so fascinating to see human activity. I loved it. And, of course, living in a place like Manhattan, just looking at the buildings, if you drive on one of the highways, East Side Highway, West Side Highway, and looking and seeing all the skyscrapers with lights on, and you know there were people more or less like us in there, like, wow, wow. Human imagination. Unbelievable. So exciting. But I bet even today, you could astonish yourself by thumbing through a Yellow Pages and looking at all the different types of businesses that produce value. They create jobs, they satisfy customers, and they make people wealthy. Wow, I didn't know you could make a living doing that. Yeah, you'll end up saying the same thing. This idea when I was a kid, I wanted to be a Maronite missionary, which is basically a Catholic priest's job. It became obvious to me pretty quickly that there were girls in the world, a lot of girls, and they were appealing to me. So priesthood girls, I preferred girls. But in retrospect, I now realize that this idea of missionary work and priesthood was really based upon certain associations that I made and that I valued, and it gave me a sense of direction. I wanted to go in that direction, but my view was somewhat limited. I wanted to understand God better. You know what? That's not unusual. A person wants to understand God better, and I wanted to understand it better than some of the people who were telling me what God was and what God wasn't. Most people don't know what they're talking about. I want to know what God is all about. And I wanted to advise, and I wanted to minister, and I wanted to coach, and I wanted to care for people spiritually. My mother was a nurse. My father was an attorney. So I kind of see the combination of those two impulses to care for people intellectually and spiritually. But I didn't really want to bandage wounds. I certainly was not absorbed in all the rituals that came with being involved with the Catholic Church. Most of them, and I was an altar boy, and I'm like, I don't understand why they. This doesn't make sense to me. And the reason I wanted to advise or to minister or to care for or nurture people spiritually, not because I had great advisors. I certainly had intermittent inputs that guided me in that way, but by and large, I lacked that kind of coaching. I wished I had coaching that could have spoken a language that I was willing to listen to. But being resistant and rejecting and defensive, you had to be a special person to be able to penetrate my shields, my armor. So I looked over life and, you know what? I projected my own unmet needs. I'd like somebody to be able to get through to me onto the world generally. And I said, you know what? I can't be the only one in the whole wide world who is like this. I'm going to see if I can't find those people and help fulfill their needs like I would have preferred my own needs to be fulfilled. But not being fulfilled was obviously part of the educational process. This is how you know it's important. I didn't get it, and I decided it's important. Once I stopped identifying myself as a Catholic, I considered myself, and I used these words to myself and others, I'm a priest looking for a religion. But what I was really looking for was a spiritual framework. I wasn't looking for a religion. I didn't want to belong to an organization. That didn't really appeal to me. I was looking for some philosophy, some sense of understanding, some reasonable framework of knowledge that I could live by as an individual and teach or share with other people. Now, over the years, I'd been making some progress, little step by little step, but that little step process changed dramatically one day, October 14th, 2010, when a woman gifted me Christ's letters. I had done something kind for her, and she reciprocated with that as a gift, which was kind of cool because the law of cause and effect says we reap what we sow. So I saw it as a direct harvest from that kindness that I rendered to this woman, but I also saw it as the evidence that I had been reaching out in thought and feeling for a long time to divine consciousness. Now, I didn't get the phrase divine consciousness until I read Christ's letters, so that was wonderful. But up to that point, it was there's more here. I want to know. And reaching out to divine consciousness for answers to questions is a mighty good thing. Now, you might have gotten this from my conversation and previous conversations, that I like information. I like a lot of information. And that was obvious even when I was a young child. I read everything I could get my hands on. That seemed to be the normal way to do things. And because of my family circumstances and other things, I thought about suffering as well. Human suffering and animal suffering. I also, when I look at it, liked strong heroic characters. I loved Tarzan. I loved Rama of the Jungle. I loved Buster Crab. He played in the TV series French Foreign Legion. I loved it. And I loved Jesus, not because he got crucified, but because he was a parable-speaking miracle worker and a teacher. And a healer. I love that. And every one of those individuals in reality or on TV or in fiction, they made things better for other people. That's appealing to me. If you could have gone back years ago and said, Tom, would you want to be a composite of all of those people? I would have yelled, yes. But now, looking back, as it turns out, I'm still in the process of becoming a composite of all of those people. I've worked and lived in the jungle. I've done things. I've been in the American version of the Foreign Legion. And I'm devoted to understanding Christ and Christ consciousness. And that brought me to this realization. Now, it's an opinion. People are either recreating their own lives according to the images they resonated with as children, just like I just described, or they're frustrated by not choosing these directions and taking action to fulfill those dreams. So what does that mean? Maybe each of us could examine our own lives, revisit our childhood dreams and what we liked and what we thought was heroic and good and loving and wonderful, and then strengthen our commitment to those energy patterns, those characteristics, and go in those directions and then help other people do the same. I would like to end this service with a prayer. This is the pluralized version of the prayer from Letter 8 in Christ Returns, Reveals Startling Truth. Father, Mother, Life, you are our life, our constant support, our health, our protection, our perfect fulfillment of every need, and our highest inspiration. We ask you to reveal the true reality of yourselves to us. We know it is your will that we shall be fully illumined, that we may better receive awareness of your presence within and around us. We believe and know that this is possible. We believe that you protect and maintain us within perfect love. We know that our eventual purpose is to express you. As we speak to you, we know you are perfectly receptive of us, for you are universal, loving intelligence, which has so marvelously designed this world and brought it into visible form. We know that as we ask you to speak to us, we are sending out a consciousness searchlight into your divine consciousness. And as we listen, you will be penetrating our human consciousness and coming ever closer to our increasingly receptive minds and hearts. We commit ourselves and our lives into your care. Thank you. It is so. Amen.